Welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk K-12 Education. I'm your host, Tanisha Langley, Senior Education Consultant of Enrichment Strategist Services, LLC. We're a firm dedicated to designing dynamic learning experiences for educational institutions and entities that are not meeting their educational indicators. We work by converting capabilities into capacity, empowering individuals to grow with their learning goals. Here at Let's Talk K-12 Education, we are so glad you're here with us. But before we dive into today's conversation, we just want to take a quick moment to give a huge shout out to you, our incredible listeners. We see you tuning in every single week, ready to engage with the kind of critical conversations that truly move our schools, that in turn move our communities forward. And we can't tell you how much we appreciate your energy as a community and dedication as fellow education enthusiasts. You're the heart of this show. And the reason I'm so excited as your show host to share my thought leadership. Thank you for making this show what it is. Now, let's get into it. Thank you for joining episode 29. And today we're diving deep into data-driven decisions using analytics for student success. Now, if I've got my educators out there listening, if I've got my school building leaders out there listening, if I have my instructional coaches out there listening, this is not to insult your intelligence at all as it pertains to data, but I have to tell you, I have discovered that sometimes what comes just second nature to me, which is analyzing data, crunching student numbers, looking at trends, sometimes it's not as easy for some educators because it can be a little tricky, but I have to give my sincere appreciation for loving data to my wonderful clinical intern teacher, Nakia Williams, and to my wonderful, wonderful practicum teacher, later turned very good friend, and who gave me my first shot as a 3-5 remediation teacher, Stephanie Austin. So I just had to give a huge shout out to them. They were not only curriculum beast, but they knew the details were in the numbers. And that's why even today, right at about 15 years later, I'm still just a data chick nerd. Okay. If you hear it in my voice, it is because it is true. I could sit and dive into, I'm not a math person by any stretch of the imagination, but I get a sincere excitement as I look at student data. Because again, that is my foundation from some curriculum beasts, some of the best teachers and educators around. And they understood that you have to have data-driven instructions. Okay, got that out. And this is without coffee. This is how much I'm letting you know tonight, where I really geek it up in education as a thought leader and education enthusiast, is when it's talking about the numbers. So many details in the data. Okay. All right. So, and a lot of times I don't know if people understand how powerful that is. And it is my beliefs, and I won't get too much ahead of the show or this episode, but I do believe that sometimes they are trying to analyze too many things that don't matter instead of pulling out the little trends that they can work with and make impact and drive their instruction to make change. But enough of that. Okay, enough geeking, girl. Get back into the show. Okay, here I go. So, but before we look at the spreadsheets, let's look at ourselves. We all have that internal teacher radar, that gut feeling about which students are struggling and why. So let's start with a quick data versus gut check? I want you to mentally answer this question. Think about your highest performing class last year. And here's the question. What percentage of your students would you bet right now are performing below grade level in one key foundational skill like reading, inferencing, or solving multi-step word problems? Take a second. Is your gut saying 5%, 15%? Now, here's the reality. When educators finally run the reports and drill down into those specific sub-skills, the data often reveals a hidden gap that's 15 to 25 percentage points higher than our initial gut guess. How about that? Isn't that great news? That gap between what we feel and what the evidence shows is the reason we are here today. We aren't here to replace intuition, guys, but to sharpen it with precision. Stay with us because we're going to give you the tools to close that gap and ensure every decision you make is backed by evidence. Okay? Let's get started. As you can hear in my voice, this makes me so excited, guys. So again, welcome back to episode 29. On the Let's Talk K-12 Education Show, I'm your host, Tanisha Langley, and today we're tackling a topic that moves beyond mandates and gets right to the heart of instructional effectiveness. Data-driven decisions. We all collect data, but are we truly using it to drive student success? So here's a topic focus. In a high stakes environment, we can't afford to rely on guesswork. We need to move from "I think the students know this" to "the data shows exactly where our intervention needs to go." Today, we'll break down the practical steps of data-driven instruction and then launch our Capacity Builder Challenge, a practical look at analyzing a reading data set, okay? So, why data matters, or data, apples, potatoes, same things. Setting the foundation. Let's start with the fundamental shift, moving from intuition to evidence. Intuition is valuable, but it's often based on the most visible, vocal, or compliant students. Data gives us the full, unbiased picture, especially of those students who might be quietly struggling or excelling off the radar. So let's define DDI, which basically stands for data-driven instruction. It isn't just about test scores. It's a continuous cycle. Analyze, adjust, and teach. Analyze, adjust, and teach. And the goal is personalization and precision. Now, let me say, from my experience as a classroom teacher and teacher leader, mentor teacher, and did some instructional leadership for my district, okay? I am definitely not coming out of a genie, out of a bottle to say, oh my goodness, it's just so easy to do all of this customization. Oh my goodness, it's just so easy to differentiate with all the different reading levels. I am not coming out of a genie bottle, guys. That is not what I'm saying. Because if we really did it the way that it was supposed to, with differentiation, meaning where are these students as far as the grade levels? What are several different types of data sets? What is it telling you? Because again, I just said we can't look at one or two things like the EOG or a check-in or a benchmark and say, okay, this is where this student is in their levels. Okay. We have to look at trends. Let me say this again. We have to look at trends. And sometimes if you feel a little adventurous and you've had an extra cup of coffee, you're caught up on things, I would even suggest you to look back at them at least one grade level, or if you're feeling super adventurous, go back to two grade levels, either in their CUME folders or wherever you can find their, you know, information as far as their academics, their report cards, progress reports, former benchmarks if they haven't began the end of year high stakes testing, whatever it is called in your district or state. Go back and look at that data. What is it telling you? Different sets of subsets. You'd be surprised what's hidden in there, okay? So we're identifying micro gaps in skills, not just macro gaps in grade levels. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-wee. So the shift in culture, how do we create a culture where data is helpful and not punitive? Let me read that question one more time out there. How do we create a culture where data is helpful and not punitive? Meaning that, you know, what can we do with this particular data instead of making a child feel less than because they weren't, they didn't meet proficiency on any given high stakes test, whether it is a district test, a state test. But what can we do with that data? Okay. Focus on the instruction, not the instructor. Data should answer the question, what is the next best thing I can do for this student right now? Right now, guys, this requires collective efficacy. Teachers believe in they can change outcomes based on the evidence, okay? So here are a few data types. We use several data points. I just kind of went over some of them. Summative data, EOGs, final exams. This gives us a lagging picture of overall achievement, okay? Formative data, exit tickets, quick checks, gives us a current actionable picture of mastery. So I always talk about some quick, fun, engaging instructional strategies like playing four corners to have them. And again, I always talk about literacy because that's where my expertise lies. But you can use it for math, science, social studies. It doesn't matter. So four corners is putting up A, B, C, D, or E, F, G, H, whatever the alignment is for the multiple choice questions. Put them in different areas of the room and then read the question and have the student stand and they answer the corner that they chose. Whether it is A, they need to go in A. That's a very quick assessment. And it's a fun way to get them up out of their seats. And you can have them having conversation in the corners as they talk about why they chose the answer that they chose. So many different things that we can do that gives us a current actionable picture of mastery. So growth data like the NWE map or iReady tracks progress over time, showing our instructional effectiveness for the teachers, okay? Now, here is something that I want you guys to really listen about, data overload. A common pitfall is data overload. Teachers are often presented with giant spreadsheets. Our job as leaders, like myself, is to curate the data. Identify the 1 to 3 most important metrics tied to your school's literacy goal and provide pre-analyzed, easily digestible visuals to the team, okay? You don't want them to have analysis paralysis, okay? Because you want them to be clear cut, smooth, like a nice cup of coffee. Can you guys pick up that I would like a nice cup of coffee? so that they're able to digest what it is that they need to do to drive the instruction so that we can get those outcomes. So they're able to relay that over to and what they do with their students to get the outcomes that are desired, okay? So now let's transition to pillars. To make this practical, let's explore the four pillars, of effective data-driven instruction. We'll use these pillars to prepare for our challenge. All right, so here are the four pillars of data-driven instruction. Pillar one, analysis, the deep dive. Data analysis, this is where we look past the overall score. We must disaggregate the data. For instance, in reading, look at the sub skills. Do students struggle with inferring meaning, or are they struggling with identifying central idea? Averages hide important details. We need to look at student response patterns. If 8 out of 10 students miss the same vocabulary question, that's not a student problem, guys. It's an instructional opportunity that we, as instruction and facilitators, missed. Pillar 2, action planning the strategy. And I call myself the strategist for this very reason. I love action planning. Once you find the gap, what's the specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound SMART plan, like a SMART goal? A week plan is review the main idea next week. A strong plan is by Friday, 80% of students will correctly identify the central idea of an informational text using the somebody wanted but so then strategy. Okay? That is about as smart as you can get it, guys. Okay? We will use a 5-minute pre-assessment and a 10-minute post-assessment. Okay? Got it? Awesome sauce. Pillar 3, targeted instruction, the intervention. Pillar 3 to targeted instruction, this is where the magic happens. Instruction must be flexible and differentiated, meaning according to the ability levels of the students. We use the data to group students based on specific needs, not just proximity. This includes tier 1 differentiation, small temporary groups, keyword there, temporary groups within the classroom focus on the identified skill gap. So that means if the students are doing well and they're growing, you need to phase them out. If they're not growing, that means you may need to take a step back. That's where sometimes some of the teachers or our leaders are missing this. We have to really pay attention to the data and not just look at it, but we need to have action based upon what we see, okay? It's rapid cycle intervention. Pillar 4 is assessment, the check. So pillar 4 is frequent assessment. This closes the loop. After the targeted instruction, after you already taught them, we must use an assessment that is parallel to the original data point to check for mastery. If the data shows the gap is closed, we move on. If not, we refine the action, plan, and reteach using a different strategy. Oh my goodness, let me back over that again. Using a different strategy. So, if you taught something, you targeted the instruction, you use a strategy, and you see that the numbers are still not where you like them, switch it up. If you're not quite sure, what strategy to use, what I used to tell my mentees that I used to mentor as beginning teachers, is to find someone almost like a flex grouping. Find that teacher that is doing a fine job on that particular standard or that particular skill and ask them, what are you doing to get the results that you're getting from your students? And try their strategy, okay? This moves us away from teaching everything again and toward fixing only what's broken. So now let's transition to the challenge. These four pillars, which was analysis, planning, instruction, and assessment, form the cycle. Now let's apply pillar 1 to a real world scenario with our capacity builder challenge. All right, I hope you took really good notes. All right, capacity builder challenge. All right, so we're going to look at this challenge. So this is the challenge that we're going to do. We're looking at a simulated grade 3 through 12 reading data set focusing on student proficiency levels in one key area. Okay. Reading information text, which is RIT, our goal, identify a significant trend that requires immediate attention. The data snapshot is a verbal description. Imagine a table showing performance data over the last 3 years, fall of 2023, spring of 2024, fall of 2024. We're looking at the percentage of students scoring proficient, meeting expectations or above. So, describing the simulated trend, let's look at the simulated numbers. All right, so I'm going to read these clearly. All right, for grades 3 through 5, which is elementary, proficiency holds steady, ranging from 68 to 72% across all three assessment points. Grades 6 through 8, middle school, performance is inconsistent. Fall 2023, that was at 55%. Spring 2024 jumped to 65%, but fall 2024 dropped sharply to 48%. Grades 9 through 12, high school, performance is the lowest and most stagnant, hovering consistently between 35% and 38% proficiency. All right. Guiding the analysis. Now, let's analyze this using the trend analysis questions. Which area is stable? Elementary. If you said elementary, good job. Maintain that. Tier 1 instruction. Number 2, which area shows the greatest variance? If you said middle school, you're correct. We see a significant 17-point swing. Number 3, which area shows the most critical stagnation? If you said high school, you would be correct. Give yourself a high five because they have low proficiency that hasn't changed, yikes, in 3 years, suggesting an entrenched systemic issue, okay? Identifying the main trend. The most immediate severe trend is the middle school decline. Specifically, the drop to 48% proficiency in fall 2024. This requires immediate intervention because it represents a sudden, significant failure for the incoming cohort of students. We can't wait until the spring, okay? The secondary systemic trend is the low, unchanging high school score. Don't be ashamed about it. Transition to action. We've identified the middle school gap. Now, what do we do? Let's move to actionable takeaways. So some of the actionable takeaways are, we are going to have a practical strategy for the middle school. So for the decline, the analysis suggests an issue with the transition or the core curriculum in grade 6 or 7. What is the actionable takeaway? Number 1, immediately convene the 6th and 7th grade reading teams. I know that can be hard going across grade levels, but we got to do what we have to do, guys, to get the results that we're looking for. Actionable takeaway: use a diagnostic formative assessment focusing only on identifying text structure, compare and contrast, cause and effect. And that, I know for certain, cause and effect is a really hard one. My recommendation for that are to use the thinking maps. Look it up. It's called a multi-flow map for cause and effect, because cause and effect is a little difficult. In informational passages, as this is a foundational reading informational skill, actionable takeaway number 3, implement a specific 4-week action plan for all middle school teachers, not just ELA, to reinforce, text structure in their content areas. Systemic strategy for high school. Now, here's a good one. For the high school stagnation, the approach must be different. It's a systemic issue. Actionable takeaway: conduct a vertical alignment study between 8th grade and 9th grade to see if the reading intervention expectations are misaligned. This is a longer term fix. So here's my final thought and recap. Remember the power of the cycle. Analyze the data. Plan the specific strategy, target the instruction, and check with frequent assessment. Data is your flashlight, not your hammer. It lights the way to success. So here's a call to action for you. So thank you for joining us for this essential conversation. We want to hear from you. Excuse me. What is the most effective data visualization your school uses? Email us at letstalkk12education@gmail.com to talk about it, okay? So for episode 29, Data-Driven Decisions, Using Analytics for Student Success, you've been listening to the Let's Talk K-12 Education right here on the Realizing Your Potential TV network. I'm your host, Tanisha Langley, Senior Education Consultant with Enrichment Strategist Services, LLC. Remember, one conversation, one discussion, and one connection at a time. We are designing learning experiences that transform capabilities into capacity, not just for students, but for families and entire communities. Education is more than a system. It's a movement. And together, we are building the future brick by brick, voice by voice, and learner by learner. If today's conversation sparks something in you, whether it's a question, an idea, or a desire to collaborate, or an interest in my education consulting and coaching services, I'd love to hear from you at, again, letstalkk12education@gmail.com. Before we head out of here today, let's do some key takeaway from Senior Education Consultant Tanisha Langley on our topic today of data-driven decisions using analytics for student success and school turnaround transformations. As we close today's discussion, let's reflect on the power of data, not just as numbers, but as a narrative of possibility. When used strategically, data becomes the bridge between where students are and where they can go. Here are the key takeaways to remember. Data is a story, not a score. Every data point represents a learner's journey, their progress, potential, and sometimes their silent struggles. When we view data as a story, we begin to humanize our analytics. That's when true instructional impact begins. Number two, analysis without action, I went over that earlier, is incomplete. Collecting data is only the first step. Real transformation happens when educators translate trends into targeted action. From intervention strategies to professional learning priorities, data must move from spreadsheets to student outcomes. Number three, collaboration makes data powerful. Data-driven success isn't a solo act. When teachers, leaders, families, and students analyze results together, we shift from compliance to collective accountability. It's the conversation around data that drives continuous improvement. Number four, equity lives in the details. Analytics reveal disparities and help us close learning gaps with precision by disaggregating data by subgroup, attendance, or instructional access. We ensure every child's growth is visible and every decision is equitable. Number five, from data to culture, the turnaround mindset. Successful school transformation doesn't begin with a new program. It begins with a data culture, one where reflection is routine, evidence guides innovation, and improvement is celebrated. When schools embrace analytics as a tool for empowerment, not evaluation, They build the foundation for sustained growth and renewed hope. Isn't that great, guys? So here's the final thought. At Enrichment Strategy Services, LLC, we believe data-driven decisions are not just about performance. They're about purpose. Data becomes transformative when educators use it to inspire action, rebuild trust, and create systems that ensure every student thrives. Let's continue to lead with data, teach with intention, and transform with impact. Because when strategy meets empathy, student success follows. So if your district, school, or program is seeking data-driven results, focused solutions that lead to measurable literacy gains and sustainable student success in any learning environment, I'd love to partner with you. Let's design a strategy that works. Email me directly at letstalkk12education@gmail.com. All right, until we meet again every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, keep pushing boundaries, keep believing in possibilities, and above all, keep realizing your potential. This is Let's Talk K-12 Education, where learning meets leadership and capacity becomes community strength. Toodles to you for now.